Welcome to the Seattle Kitchen on Cairo Radio, 93 FM, 93.7 FM. I'm Tom Douglas, owner of several of Seattle's finest restaurants, along with my good pal, Chef Thierry Rotero. What's up, Chef?
Bonjour, Tom. I'm great. How are you doing?
I am just fine. My ears are starting to stop ringing after partying with you on Saturday night. We'll get into that a little bit later. This is the Seattle Kitchen Show. We are here 2 hours, two or three times a weekend. We're happy that you've joined us. If you can't get us live on terrestrial radio, then maybe get us up in a podcast or something of that sort.
Anywhere on the planet.
As usual, we have a very large show. Bamboo Sushi, a Portland-based sushi restaurant, is coming to Seattle and many other towns. They are expanding nationwide. Christopher Lofgren is going to be here to talk about his new product that he's bringing to the neighborhood. Brittany Bartleben, chef from the Dahlia Bakery and Dahlia Lounge, is going to come into the baker's corner to get us started on...
Fruitcake.
Fruitcake.
Yep, because you better start now, right?
You got to start now, so at least it has a month or two to age before Christmas.
For 2020.
And I don't want to hear all this nonsense. Well, that would be interesting to make two and have one this Christmas and one next and see which one you like better.
Right.
And just continue to soak it in brandy. Believe me, it's not going to go anywhere. It'll look just the same a year later.
If you put the right amount of brandy, it'd still be there.
It'd still be there. I made Jackie's, or the bakers made Jackie's famous fruitcake bars that are in the Dahlia Bakery cookbook. Which we only have this time of year, really. Dang, they are good. I just got to say, I love fruitcake. Those people that are just cringe when they have... there's fruitcake other than the Lions Club fruitcake that came around when we were kids. I think the Lions Club was all about blindness, and it would make you blind, for sure. Ordinary to Extraordinary is coming up. And, of course, we're going to finish the show with Food for Thought Tasty Trivia. Chef, your week is good. I know I partied with you Saturday night. You were on the karaoke mic literally for 4 hours.
I was just glued to that mic.
I know you were. Believe me. I had to leave. My ears were bleeding.
Just because our host was very... we had a lot
You were on a horse and the mic?
No, the host. Not
oh, the host.
Was really a lot of fun. So, mm-hmm. we had a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad you did.
I don't think of people listening. I only think of me singing.
What did you think when all the people that were sitting around had tears in their eyes? What did you think about that?
I thought, wow, I've never made so many people happy at once.
Oh, I thought those were tears of pain, I think. Anyway, Ordinary to Extraordinary, let's jump right into chicken soup. Because I made some chicken soup this weekend.
You did?
Just saying. I did.
Did you make the noodle or did you buy the noodle?
I didn't make chicken noodle soup. I made chicken soup.
Just chicken soup.
And I used the beans that Jackie grew, the dried beans. We're trying to use up last year's dried beans.
Yeah, yeah.
Because this year's crop is
arriving.
Ready to be plucked. And so, yeah, we're on 2018 beans right now. And, so I made chicken soup with beans and fresh vegetables. And I had a whole larding the pantry day on Sunday. So first thing I did was I went to... the marketplace. I got mountains of chicken bones.
Uh-huh.
I got a big mountain of oxtails, and I made beef and barley soup out of the oxtails.
Mm.
Just cooked them low and slow for a long time. Really good, and it had beans in it. I made clam chowder with Yukon Gold potatoes, bacon, clams, and it had beans in it. And I made.
Wait a minute.
Chicken vegetable soup with beans in it.
I have a question. I thought you didn't even like beans.
I don't, but we had to use them up.
That's a lot of suffering.
And I made stock, reduced chicken stock for the freezer. Uh-huh. And I made beef stock for the freezer. My freezer is loaded. I made lamb stew. It was a big larding the pantry day.
Wow,
you ever
cool.
have a day like that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I have days like that, and I love them. It feels really good once, Monday comes around, everything has been cooled off,
mm-hmm.
transfer everything in small container and organize your freezer, and you're set for the next couple of months because every time you want some stock, you can go and reach in that freezer and just, here you go. You get some fresh homemade chicken stock.
If you want to see my larded freezer, Tina, I took a picture just for you.
Oh,
so
right?
You can post it on our Facebook page of my larded freezer, because next to the soup is the sautéed chanterelles. Next to that is the pickled Prosser peppers. Next to that is the dried tomatoes in olive oil in the freezer.
I think we should play what's left in your fridge with you.
I'm just saying, right there. It's in there on purpose.
It's going to be
left.
Easy.
Yeah. Okay. And you?
The only thing I've made was a butternut squash soup. And I keep forgetting how delicious that is every year. You know, we get butternut squash, and by March, I'm like, it'd be nice if we moved on to something else besides squashes. But I tell you, a good butternut squash soup, which is so simple to make, you slice some onions, you sweat them in a little bit of olive oil or butter. Personally, I think olive oil is fine. You don't need to go into butter in that one. And sweat them down all the way to translucent. Put all your pieces of small dice of butternut squash in there. Toss them around for a little few minutes, and then put some vegetable stock on top of that, or chicken stock, and then bring it to a boil. Blend the whole thing up, and you have this unctuous, beautiful soup. Once you strain it, it's absolutely gorgeous, and it's just beautiful.
And then, if you want to put shredded chicken in, you can have your extraordinary chicken soup.
You can crumble some goat cheese. You can do a little pesto of all that basil that you've put away. You can do so many different things with that. It's beautiful. But most importantly, when you do dishes like this, make a big batch.
Yeah.
And then put some in the freezer. So then, you know, Thursday night, you're going to come home tired. You've been stuck in traffic or whatever. You pop that baby up in the microwave, or you just take it out, put it in a pan.
Or you come to one of our restaurants.
Oh, you. That would be Friday.
Oh, okay.
Thursday night. I'm just saying.
It's absolutely. I made lamb stew for 15 people that night, Sunday night, which is usually when I have a larding day, is when I have a dinner or something to go along with it.
Right.
So I did the same thing with the lamb stew, right? I ended up with two extra half pints with roasted curry squash in it and roasted chanterelles.
And I would
suggest
that
to anybody. If you're making a stew and you don't want your vegetables to get overcooked, roast them on the side. Put them on a sheet pan. Put them in the oven. Roast them and dehydrate them on the side. And then for the last 5 minutes, stir them into your stew.
Right.
And you end up with vegetables that actually have their own
flavor and texture.
Yeah, and texture, right. Because sometimes you cook them so long, they kind of break down and become part of a sauce rather than an actual vegetable.
Woo!
That was our tip of the week. So much for our ordinary to extraordinary chicken soup. up next, we have our taste of the week. And Tina has brought a unidentified object in a yellow wrap called fitness bread.
It looked like a bread.
So I'm curious about that. When we come back on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Seattle Kitchen on Cairo Radio. It's Tom Douglas and
Terry Roach, you roll the chef in a hat.
And we're having our taste of the week. We're going to jump right in here. We're here at the Hot Stove Society. If you ever want to join us, go to hotstovesociety.com and buy a ticket, $20. You, too, can have a fantastic time like our audience is right now, just waiting on a Dahlia Bakery breakfast sandwich that comes with it. So, Tina, our producer, you like to join us once in a while because as you explore your new plant-based diet, you find little things that make you happy.
Because
for Terry and I, lots of things make us happy, but you would never eat them, right? So
anymore. It is very strange to have made the switch in February to a whole food plant-based way of eating. So, the fun thing about it is it's made me much more creative in the kitchen. I'm cooking a whole lot more, and I'm exploring all kinds of different things to eat because there's not much I can eat.
Yeah.
So in our Taste of the Week, we like to go around and each of us share something fun that they've eaten this week, and I shared with you my fitness bread.
Mm-hmm. Which I share with you. I've eaten it for years.
Right.
But always
not new to you.
Well-toasted and lathered, literally lathered in butter.
Yeah. It is a whole grid. It's got a lot of grains and wheat germ, so it's, you know, technically good for you bread, but it's thinly sliced. It's pretty dense. But it's quite delicious, and I found it at Met Market. I couldn't find it at Whole Foods, but I did find it at Met Market.
I see it at QFC, too. I will say it's good for you until you choke to death on it.
It's pretty dense.
Because it is pretty dense and pretty dry if you don't toast it and add a lot of butter to it.
Yeah. You know what I did? It makes it for a great vehicle for avocado, so like an avocado toast.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of...
That's not surprising.
If you toast it up pretty, you know.
Is there a bad vehicle for avocado?
I mean,
tortilla chips, toast.
I must say, I can't think of a bad vessel for that.
Yeah.
No.
Because I would say that while maybe you're fit, if it is being shipped all the way in from Germany,
you might want
to think about going to Seawolf or someplace like that, a local bakery.
Yes.
That makes beautiful, dense breads like that and try the same thing.
Yeah.
Chef, I had dinner last night in Ballard, Old Ballard, which is a pretty hopping place. And I went to a little restaurant called Skal, S-K-A-L.
I've heard of that.
I've heard of it. Where is it?
Right on Ballard Avenue, Old Ballard Avenue there.
Okay.
I was pleasantly surprised. I went in and they were having a class. I guess it's a Swedish-Norwegian type restaurant. And they were having a class on how to speak the language. So the place was jammed, filled up, jammed on all these people learning to speak the language. It's either old Viking or maybe it's Swedish. I honestly couldn't understand a word they were saying, so I just know that they were all on their cell phones and all going along with the instructor of learning how to speak the language. It was quite an amazing
and this
Ballard
was
experience.
This was a restaurant?
Yeah, it was a restaurant. It's kind of like, you know, restaurants have trivia night or
okay, I see.
Comedy night. And the Vikings, Kirk Douglas and Tony... Kirk Douglas and Tony Curtis were on the movie screen in the movie The Vikings, with Janet Leigh. Was that she the other star in that? Crazy movie. And so I'm watching these people. I'm watching that are learning the language. I'm watching Kurt and Tony Curtis. And then I'm watching Monday Night Football. And it was just a slice. It was a Ballard slice.
Okay, so first question, did you eat anything?
I did. I did eat something. They have, oddly enough, a Swedish menu.
Yes.
And so I had a pretzel and I had herring. The herring plate was really good. It had herring just kind of with carrots and onions, which you see oftentimes, they called the plain herring. Right. They had herring with a curry mayonnaise. And then they had herring with huckleberries and red wine, I think, or something like that. I'm not really sure. So that was a very interesting plate with a lot of big rye crisp. We had, my favorite taste. This is why we're having this segment. My favorite taste was the lamb ribs. Really heavily spiced and really nicely cooked. So they were a little bit crunchy, and I really enjoyed the lamb ribs there. So
cool. Were they as good as Rendezvous?
Different.
Oh,
yes.
Different.
Certainly good in their own right.
Right.
And much leaner than the Rendezvous, the ones in Memphis, Tennessee. But the dry rubbed lamb ribs. But still, it was a great taste and really unexpected.
Wow.
I wasn't expecting to go to that restaurant. I found a parking space on Ballard Avenue, so I thought, what's nearby? So I almost went into the La Carta de Oaxaca because for the first time in my life, I walked by that restaurant. It was half empty. Normally, it's always jammed to the ceiling.
Yeah, that is a rarity. Yeah.
So I was almost going to go in there, and then the Skal was right next door, and it's like, let's try it.
Yeah, how often do you go to Skal?
Yeah.
Oh, I get it.
So that was my taste of the week. Nice folks in there, very helpful. It's a beer hall, generally. They had one red wine. And
you want to drink the beer?
I was really hesitant to buy it because... One red wine. They're a beer hall. Right? So I bought it. It was from Gard Winery, G-A-R-D. Oh, yeah.
That's actually very good.
Really good.
Yeah.
Super tasty bottle of wine. So I enjoyed that. Everything was a surprise.
Beautiful.
Great fun. Big bar. Great fun.
Well, I had one of those last night, too. And that was last night as well. Went to 25th and Jackson to a fairly new restaurant / bar called... Reckless Noodles. Vietnamese food, delicious food, great ambiance, very small place. Make sure you walk in early because, as those small places do, they fill up. But it was Selena, my new daughter's birthday, and we celebrated there, and it was fantastic. The food was delicious. The noodles were specifically delicious.
Uh-huh.
And one thing that was actually total surprise, the biggest surprise of the night, was desserts. They had ice cream that was one of the lightest, fluffiest ice cream I've had in a long time. They have a vanilla ice cream with a bourbon from Westland Distillery.
Mm-hmm.
That was quite scrumptious. I'm not the kind of guy who's just going to go crazy with ice cream, but that was...
Now, that is a little bit weird because I walked across the street from Skal last night and had Westland Distillery ice cream at Salt and Straw.
Seriously?
Isn't that weird? Yeah, that was a small world.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it was really well. The fluffiness of the ice cream is what was impressive to me, how gorgeous that was.
Is that a good thing to you, the fluffiness? Because I'm a Haagen-Dazs fan. I like that dense density.
I like it dense, but I don't like it hard. like, you know,
so
some
you'll
ice
get well tempered.
Yeah, yeah. That's, some ice cream are just way too hard to me, mm-hmm. I think, to eat. This was really delicious.
Mm. Oh. Good.
I mean, it's very strange to recommend a Vietnamese restaurant for their ice cream, but that's what it was. And I recommend it for the entire menu. It's delicious.
And you think they made the ice cream there?
Oh, yeah, no, it's made there. I asked them.
Okay.
Yeah. They have a little ice cream maker, and they just churn the damn thing, and that's why it stays nice and light, and they probably do it just before service,
mm-hmm.
so it doesn't freeze really, really, really hard.
Or their freezer's not working very well.
I feel like I won this segment with my fitness bread.
I don't think so.
No, no, no. No. I think
we only lost three audience members who are choking
about that
to death
already.
Back there right now. All right, coming up, we're going to do a dinner party using crab in every course on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. It's time for our dinner party right here on Cairo Radio. We're going to Tina's house. We're going to make some dinner. And Tina is a crab fan. So
I do love crab.
So who is our special guest for our dinner party, Tina?
Sebastian, the crab from The Little Mermaid.
We're going to eat Sebastian?
No, we're going
that
to.
That is not a good idea to invent.
It's like cannibalism.
Invite the crab
okay,
to a crab dinner.
You're right. It's not nice. Okay.
God. Who's your favorite? Like Scrooge. He's kind of crabby.
Yeah. Yeah. Oscar the Grouch.
Oscar the Grouch.
Yeah.
Okay.
Super crabby.
All right.
That's better.
You know, we have a crabby happy hour at Etta's, just so you know.
Mm.
It's a whole hour of crabby specials.
What
Instead
do you
of
get?
Being happy.
What Sounds lovely.
Oddly enough, you get crab. Yeah. So let's do a dinner party. Oscar the Grouch is coming. He's going to bring Big Bird and Kermit and Miss Piggy.
Yep, everybody gets to come. And you guys have to use crab in every course, from the appetizer all the way to the dessert.
Okay.
How are you going to... Okay,
I know what I'm... Let's just start with dessert. I'm making a crab bisque ice cream with crab jellies. A little crab mochi on top. Because last night I was at Salt and Straw, and I had their special flavors, and one was like the monster something. And they said, do you have any allergies? I said, yeah, my wife's allergic to crab and lobsters. Oh, we're going to get a special ice cream scoop.
Are you serious?
Yeah. So they went in the back, got her ice cream with a different scoop out of a different bin, that so it wasn't near this adventurous animal ice cream.
Wow.
So we never did find out what was in their Halloween special, but we weren't allowed to eat that one.
Maybe they were just crab candy.
I just think they have here's what I told Jackie. I thought, I think they have a protocol that if anyone's allergic to anything, they have this little protocol.
They only have one bin.
Yeah, they just go all the way to the back.
All the way
they have
to the back. There's one bin
in the back,
for the allergy.
And they go.
It's a smart way to do it when you have that many different options.
Well, do you really think there was crab or lobster in their ice cream?
No, probably not. I would guess probably not.
But they made a big deal out of it. It was
it's
very
so
interesting
funny.
To see. Yeah. Anyway, right. So I'm going to make a crab bisque ice cream.
Okay.
So you're starting with the dessert. All right.
Start with the dessert. So we talked about crab bisque, I want to say, in last week's show, where you just take the shells, you break them down, you cook them up, and you simply boil them in cream. And so it's not too difficult to do that lightly and to put them in... take that same cream, strain it out, and then make your crème anglaise out of that particular cream.
Mix that with the bisque.
I don't think it would be horrible.
I don't think it'd be good. It wouldn't be that great.
Yeah, of course not. And I'm going to serve it with a little hazelnut biscotti, because crab and hazelnut is a classic combination.
Yeah, in heaven.
A lot of people didn't know that.
Yeah, who knew? I can't believe you didn't know that.
No blue cheese? What the heck?
No blue cheese. Okay. Where do you want to go from there, Chef?
Yeah. I think I'm going to start the meal with a nice cocktail. Actually,
you're going to need it.
We're going to have a nice glass of Sauvignon Blanc and a little bit of cassis in it, like a kir.
Mm-hmm.
And then have that with a nice little crab, a raw crab salad.
Not raw.
I mean, cooked, but cold is what I meant to say, not raw. And then just take all the crab pieces from the center of the belly of the crab, and then make that into a nice little salad. We're going to use, we were talking about avocado earlier. That would be an easy one, because avocado and crab, man, that's an unctuous dinner right there.
So is that the cocktail?
That's the appetizer.
That's the appetizer, okay.
Yeah. But the cocktail is the kir. I just wanted to do a kir, because I was just thinking, you know, what goes well with crab? And dry wine goes really well with crab, but putting a little cassis in there, make it into a kheer, and that would be a nice little...
But if dry white wine goes well with crab, why would you want to sweeten it with cassis?
Just a tiny bit, because I want to go with the avocado that goes with the crab. The whole thing is a nice little sweet appetizer. Mm. That's why.
So white wine doesn't, dry white doesn't really go with crab. You want to make it
sweeter.
It goes
really well with crab, yes.
Okay.
Don't change my
Maybe
mind.
Maybe you should just use a Riesling so you don't have to add the cure or the cassis.
No, because that's not the same kind of sweetness. That's okay.
It's a different kind of sweetness. I'm calling bunk
Your
on
Highness.
This one. Yep.
Okay.
No offense, Chef. I'm just saying.
Don't take it.
If dry white wine goes well with crab, why would you sweeten it?
I bet you that nobody's going to say no if I invite them.
I think you're 100% correct. Okay, so for my entree, we're going to go down to Chinatown, and we're going to have a black bean crab. And I love this dish. I've eat it everywhere around the world. So you take a whole Dungeness crab, and sadly, you just whack it in the pieces. It needs to be alive, but then you whack it in the pieces so it dies quickly. And you take those pieces, and they're all really wet right now, right? Because a live crab comes right out of the water tank, right?
Yep.
And so it's really wet. You put all those pieces into a bowl, and you pour cornstarch over top of that and mix it around. And then you drop that whole thing, shell and all, guts and all, everything right into the fryer. And you set the crab meat really nicely. So when I say set the crab meat, if you've ever whacked a live crab or lobster, you know, the meat is very soft and very watery. And so you have to get rid of all that moisture and set that meat into its shell.
Right.
And so that's what happens. Then it gets a little crispy on the outside. While you're doing that, while it's frying, you basically want it to cook all the way. You're not going to cook it anymore. But I would say 80% to 90% cooked. While that's frying, you put a nice big wok on your stove. And then next to the wok, you have all the ingredients for your black bean sauce. So that would be chopped ginger, chopped garlic, green onions, a little chicken stock, a little slurry of cornstarch, a little rice wine or rice wine vinegar. I like a little vinegar because it adds a little bite to the sauce.
Sure.
And then the fermented black, they're not black, but when they ferment, they turn black. The black soybeans, the mung bean sprouts, right? So it's just the fermented soybeans.
Mm.
And that is going to be the makeup of your sauce. Some people like a little bit of sesame oil. I like a little bit of sesame oil. To me, people use
too much
sesame oil all the time. And then I like a little bit of soy sauce, right? So
you can always put toasted sesame seed. That would be
that
would be a better solution.
And if you want some spice, instead of using like red dried chilies, mince up a little serrano chili or a little jalapeno.
Fresh.
So now you got your hot wok, your olive oil. You're going to whisk it away into your pan. You're going to cook your garlic, ginger really fast. You're going to add your chicken stock and your fermented beans.
Mm.
Next thing you know, you have a black bean sauce. You're going to take that whacked crab out of the fryer, into your hot wok, into the sauce, toss the whole thing together, send it out on a platter, and Oscar the Grouch is going to be...
in heaven. He's not going to be grouchy anymore.
No, he's going to be in crab heaven. I just don't know with those furry paws how he's going to eat this sucker. That's going to get a little messy.
We'll give him a bib.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a crab bib.
So always steam this, right, with a little bit of steamed rice on the side, because that sauce, you're just not going to want to lose it.
Yeah.
You
got to
eat it with your fingers and then just pour that sauce. And the guts are now in the sauce, right? What we call the mustard or things like that. The guts are in the sauce, and that sauce you just spread over your steamed rice.
Bunch of chopped cilantro right on top of that.
Anybody coming for dinner?
Wow.
No. Sebastian's not coming.
We eat him.
I think it's really cool to make a crab that way. I think it's a very... We live in the best part of the world to have such luck with the Dungeness crab.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, take a good Dungeness crab, and you can do so much with that.
Yeah. And, you know, that same sauce, that same technique where you deep fry first, if you take a tilapia or a little New Zealand bass or something like that, score it along the side, dredge it in corn starch, deep fry that, then that works the same way with your black bean sauce. Same with a lobster, right? You could really do it with shrimp. You could do it with anything. But,
right.
But it really does help to cook those types of things, the shrimp, the crab, the lobster, in the shell for more of that shell flavor.
Have you tried doing that with rice flour instead of cornstarch?
No, I haven't, but I would suggest you could do a mix, but cornstarch is going to make it crispier.
Yeah, it's going to be drier.
Rice flour can get a little mealy. It's like frying with cornmeal,
yeah,
right?
Cornmeal,
it gets a little bit mealy depending on how fine it's ground.
Right.
There's two kinds of rice flours out there. There's a toasted rice flour, which I like better. I actually used it on Iron Chef when I was up against Morimoto. I did a toasted rice flour seared salmon, and it's a delicious product. It's just different.
It is one thing I learned from you, actually, Mr. Douglas, a long, long time ago. We were doing a dinner together, or maybe I was at your restaurant. In the kitchen, we were talking, and you were tossing some flour in a pan before using the flour. And I'm like, what are you doing with this flour? And you're like, I'm just toasting it. And that didn't fall in deaf here, as they say. I've used that many, many times. I think it is one way to make flour a lot more attractive than it is, especially if you're going to be dredging it into a stew or anything. It's just one more layer of flavor that you don't have to start with. And it's better to test toasted flour than raw flour.
Well, you see that oftentimes in New Orleans cooking, right? Where they take the roux and they'll just work the roux until it gets darker
and darker. Yeah, into the fat where...
Yeah, but it's still the flour is what's really getting darker.
No, no, of course.
Because it's vegetable oil in there.
But your style, I think, is better because the nuttiness is a lot stronger by itself just in the flour. There's no fat yet. And if you're just dredging a crab or whatever, you're not actually putting it in fat. You just... You know, you're just dredging the crab. So
right, and then you're putting it in fat.
Then you're putting it in
deep fryer,
cooking
it
in fat.
Exactly. You can do that same technique with pasta, right? You can take just raw pasta, put it in the oven, and roast it first until it's hazelnut brown or a little bit lighter, and then cook that pasta like you would any normal pasta. Sometimes it fractures and wants to fall apart a little bit, but the flavor is very different.
Right.
Yeah.
What temperature would you put that on, Tom?
400 degrees, but just keep an eye on it because once it starts to go brown, it goes brown fast. Yum.
Remember, it's a dry product to start. So,
all right, up next, it's Food in the News right here. I got some news on Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM.
Can't wait to hear.
And it's time for Food in the News on Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. We're coming to you from the Hot Stove Society. Happy to be here. Happy our audience hasn't been fed yet because that makes them more lively and angry and awesome. It's time for Food in the News. We got so many things going on. I know that Tina had asked me to talk about this thing happening on November the 14th. It's called Second Annual Chefs Plus Together Seattle. And over 80 local restaurants, cafes, bars, breweries, coffee shops, and sweet shops are joining forces to raise money for the Northwest Immigrant Rights Project. The inaugural event raised over $60,000. And we're going to keep going. I know we have a couple of restaurants participating.
Both of my restaurants are participating.
Nice job.
10% of the receipt will be given to that association.
You being one of my favorite immigrants.
You are one of my favorite, too.
I know. I'm from Delaware. That's a little different. No, absolutely. I think it gets lost sometimes that we tend to want to put immigrants at a border wall. And we're surrounded by immigrants. And my grandfather's, great-grandfathers.
We don't have to look very far to know the whole country is immigrant.
Yeah, exactly. For a full list, visit togetherseattle.org.
I'll also put that on our Facebook page.
Okay, good. That is just one thing happening in a couple of weeks. Right now is restaurant week here around Seattle. Do you have a couple of restaurants in there, too?
I have Just Luke, but yes, it is booming. It is. I love Seattle Restaurant Week. I think it's a great way to mingle and meet some newcomers to the restaurants. I was there Sunday night roaming the dining room and saying hi to people, and it's really fun. I mean, it's nice to see all these people who for the first time have a chance to try Luke. You know, it's really cool, and it's a beautiful menu. We have venison on the menu, we have different things, so it's all... I would suggest you go on the website of Seattle Restaurant Week and look at all the restaurants menu and pick the one you want. You only have a few days left because this is by the time this airs, this will be the last week. So it's cool. Sunday through Thursday, and restaurants are busy with it.
Yeah, they are. And it's just fun. I think we see so many people at the Dahlia in particular because people perceive it as a restaurant that's a little more expensive.
Right.
And this is an opportunity to eat there cheap.
Exactly.
35 bucks, three courses, right? Or what is it this year? 35,
35
37?
Bucks for three courses, And
so
we offer a menu that has three different choices of, you know, three appetizers, three entrees, three desserts. Plus, we have items a la carte that we always have on our menu. So it's a very interesting way to go out and introduce yourself to a restaurant, I think.
So fun.
Yeah.
My news, food in the news this week was I just got back from Manhattan.
Congratulations,
Tom. Thank you so much. And, you know, I've been working on this project with Nordstrom over the last year and a half or two for their new food facilities in one layer of the new Manhattan store.
Right.
People are confusing it because they think I own the restaurant, like it's my restaurant, and it's not. It's definitely a Nordstrom restaurant, owned and operated, but I did consult on the whole project. It was so fun to see it jump off of the blueprints and jump to life with thousands of people milling about.
Wow.
You know, so it's if you go to Manhattan, if you're going to be in Manhattan, you're going to check out the Nordstrom store. Our three restaurants that we consulted on are in the basement, lower level two. And one is called Hani Pacific, which H-A-N-I Pacific. A little taste of the kind of the Pan-Asian foods that I fell in love with when I first moved to Seattle 42 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a little mochi donut stand, which has gone crazy. We sold 2,500 mochi donuts our first day open.
I'm not surprised, man.
I don't know how they made them all.
That stuff is delicious.
We bake them by hand. You know, they're not fried donuts, so they're not greasy or anything. And we have 12 different flavors. I got to say, I don't know how they kept up. Because it takes time. It takes a lot of time to make those donuts.
You don't actually have a warehouse in the lower Manhattan somewhere?
No, over in Jersey, right?
Yeah,
no.
Jersey.
No, the kitchen is right there. And we have a little donut case, right?
Wow.
So it's super cute. And then next to that, we have a restaurant called Jeannie's, named after Jeannie Nordstrom. And it's pizza and pasta and sandwiches and more everyday salads, you know, lots of big entree salads and... but it's really fun. Like I said, it's great to see it jump off the pages. For years, we've been looking at them, doing the logos, writing the menus, drawing the space, designing, all the things you do before you open a business. And to open three at one time was pretty cool. So if you get a chance.
You need a big team for that. Open three restaurants at once.
Well, Nordstrom has a big team. You know, Nordstrom, people don't realize this, but they have 250 restaurants in their system. Along with the seven new ones, plus the seven new ones they just opened in this one store in Manhattan in one day. Seven new restaurants in one day.
The front of it on the pictures I've seen look absolutely magnificent.
It's a beautiful store.
Yeah, it looks really beautiful.
You know, they still haven't topped out that building. They're in the tallest residential building in the world, and they have the first seven floors, Nordstrom does, and the rest is all residents. And these condos, you know, they're going for... $30, $50, $100 million.
Jeez!
But they still—it's 1,500 feet tall, and they haven't topped out yet. And this store is now open in the basement. Isn't that crazy?
Think.
I always think of the rain coming all the way down.
What do you mean they haven't topped it? They haven't put the roof to it?
No.
What? That seems unreal.
Yeah, it's still open on the sides. Up at from 1,300 feet up is still open to the
They're
weather.
Not finished.
No. But it's not there. That's not their part of the
you
building.
You just don't want the guy to lose his hammer from the top.
I know. You really don't. So there's an interesting article out about the trends for 2020 that we can start looking forward to, Chef.
Mm-hmm.
Whole Foods has
Famous
released
trend.
Their predictions for on-the-rise flavors and trends. The first one that Tina got for us here is called Regenerative Agricultures. Farmers, producers, academics, government agencies, retailers, and more are taking a closer look at how to use land and animal management practices to improve soil health and sequester carbon. So, I mean, that seems to be the big conversation
of
the
day.
Well,
yes, of course.
So that's a big trend. Flower power, so all different kinds of flour is a big trend.
New flowers on the market, yeah.
They're suggesting that foods from West Africa are a big trend. Looking at some of these, I couldn't even pronounce half of the foods that they're saying we're going to be
I just
all
hope
eating
that they
by
have
the end of the year.
A way to control that, because if the whole world gets to West Africa, they're not going to have much left over in very few years. So we need to be nice and monitor that before we start.
Well, it's like quinoa, right? When we first all fell in love with quinoa, everyone but me, I'll say. it literally did take some of the food
what
off the table of
like
Peru.
What is it you don't like about quinoa, Tom?
The texture just bugs me. I'm not a quinoa guy.
Yeah, what do you mean by texture exactly? Because texture of quinoa is... What does it remind you of? Because to me, it reminds me of rice and... and beans.
I can't tell you what it means because it's unique. That's why I like rice and I like beans, sort of. And but the quinoa, it's a little crunchy. It's a little gross texture. I don't like it. Plant-based Beyond Soy products.
Okay, you know? I think that plant-based is definitely a huge, huge, huge trend, and I think it's going to be the one heading the 2020s. I think it's going to be on for a few years, and I think it's going to become definitely a part of the future diet. I don't think it's a trend that's going to come and die in a bucket of water like so many of those trends. I think this is going to be sustainable.
Here's a trend that I hope they're right, because I feel like so often we set kids up to fail, and that is rethinking kids' menus and getting them started earlier on appropriate foods and foods
absolutely.
That are better for them. And I just think that we take so many shortcuts with
plant
kids'
based.
Meals. I don't know what if it's plant-based, but I just think it's just healthier, just a more thoughtful approach. And, it used to be that was a hippie thing to do. I think it's the right thing to do, and I would...
Well, the hippie were on ahead of their time, probably,
like organic,
if you want to look at it that
way. Exactly. But I do think that if we get our kids started younger, they'll have more success. They won't end up obese like me. So.
And I think...
eating Captain Crunch with spoonfuls of sugar on top.
I think kids don't need a lot to be very smart and educated about what they need to do to make it right. So don't flatter yourself to think you're the educator. They often enough are the instigator.
No, but if you start them young,
absolutely,
on good foods, that'll be the taste that they crave.
Yep.
Up next, we're going to take questions from you, our listeners. Even somebody in the audience might have a question. Happy to come up to a mic on Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. Hey, and we're back on Cairo Radio. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rocherro, the chef in a hat.
We're going to take some questions from you, but first we're going to tell you what's coming up in the next hour. We've got, of course, we're going to finish the show with our Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge. Always a favorite, a crowd favorite. My favorite is when people yell out the answers while I'm trying to answer them. Which is always,
when you pay them
always
something
helpful
to come and help you.
We're
going to
look into Bamboo Sushi's role in our environment and their efforts to create a sustainable sushi restaurant.
You see what you said there, Bamboo Sushi role?
Yeah, I did see that. The Baker's Corner is still coming with Chef Brittany Bartleben. We're going to talk about fruitcake. I know you want to stay tuned for that, Chef, because I personally love a good fruitcake.
I like a good fruitcake,
I don't like
too.
A bad fruitcake. I kind of like a bad fruitcake, but I love a good fruitcake. So.
With crème anglaise?
No. I would say with crème anglaise, that's more of a steam cake, like a persimmon pudding or plum pudding. Then you put crème anglaise. Fruitcake is just... It is what it is. It's a piece of cake. It's like, yeah. Okay.
We all have an opinion.
We're going to answer some questions from our listeners. I'm just saying they're two different things.
Right.
That's all I'm saying. Like panettone. That's fruitcake.
Yeah.
Michael's at the mic. He's from our audience here. And we're going to answer questions from Michael. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
What is your question?
My question is, first of all, I'm very passionate for hamburgers. I'm always looking for the best hamburger. So my question for you, gentlemen, is what would be the ingredients and method for making a great hamburger?
Well, for me, I'm a big believer that you should use neck and shoulder meat, very well ground, and 20% fat. This is about the ratio that I use. I also don't like to put more stuff in my hamburger itself. I like to keep that as the meat itself. Season, salt, pepper, and then grill it. That's how I do my burger. Then I put all kinds of different garnishes with it because I think that you can always omit those if you don't want them. But the most important part needs to be the beef. It needs to taste like beef. It needs to be a great patty. That's to me. And then, of course, the bun needs to be dry on the outside, meaning that you need to have your bun grilled so then it's toasted and provides you with something that's not mushy right instantly when you put your burger on there.
Hmm.
Everything else is garnishes. You know, we do a bacon jam. We do roasted shallots. We add harissa aioli. We have arugula because I like a nice little piquant to my greens.
Jeez, I thought you said you wanted to taste the beef.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm adding. You can also put a sunny side up egg on top of your burger and then squeeze that between two pieces of bread. It's delicious.
Now, is that a real hamburger when you put all that stuff on top? What do you think, Mike?
He's making me very hungry.
Okay.
Did I mention the cheese? I forgot.
Well, but the first thing you said, you wanted to taste the beef, and then now I think with all that stuff, it's kind of hard to taste the beef.
Well, it's beef. It's kind of like having a plate of food with not just a steak on the plate. When you have just a patty, you only have a steak on the plate. All the other first stuff that comes with it enhance the steak. Obviously, you want to try to enhance it, not cover it mm-hmm. entirely or not, you know, discard it.
So, Chef Terry, cheese. What kind of cheese would you recommend?
I love Comté. Comté is a French cheese. It's like a Swiss cheese, and it melts really nicely. That's why I like it. It melts properly, and it stays as a slice of cheese right on top of your burger.
Properly.
Yeah. Properly, as opposed to, I've been to places where the cheese is not even melted when you eat your burger. That's gross. To me, it's like, it's not hot enough. It's just, you haven't done your job. You haven't finished that. That's all.
All right, Michael, there's your answer. Thank you for joining us here.
Do you have any question about that?
No, I don't.
No.
Thank you very much.
You know, we do, Chef, sometimes is we'll take shredded cheese and put it in the mixer.
Yeah.
And add at least 25% butter to it so that it melts over the burger.
That's a great technique.
There you go. Very good. All right, our next question. Chris is at the mic. Hi, Chris.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Awesome.
Thank you for having me up. I really appreciate it. You guys
Pleasure.
Are awesome. Yeah, so I wanted to get your inputs, Chef.
Sure.
Mr. Douglas was kind enough to invite me up here this morning. My name is Chris Villalpando. I opened up a pop-up restaurant.
Uh-huh.
We were open most of 2017. I moved here from New Mexico, and my cousin and I started it. We were well-received in the community. We had really good menu, a lot of hatch green chili, that kind of stuff. My father unexpectedly passed away a couple years ago, and I kind of lost my drive. And so I guess my question is, what advice would you give to a young entrepreneur that, you know, is kind of, I don't know where my footing is in the culinary industry.
You like to cook?
I love to cook. I'm not as inspired anymore, but I mean, honestly, hanging out with Chef Douglas has really helped me to kind of.
So, what inspires you right now?
I don't know. I'm still trying to find that out.
So there's two things that you would ask me, and I thought maybe Terry would have a question. We only have 2 minutes, but one is starting a possible product line with his favorite, the recipe that he's most
mm-hmm.
proud of,
and
talking about the pluses and minuses of that,
sure.
and the difficulties that you are going to face financially to kind of get something up and running.
Right. Yeah.
And one is, do you tie yourself back to the stove and recreate your
dream,
not
your
just
passion.
Your passion, but find out if you can, if your passion will lead you to that product line through the sweat and tears of working a pop-up or a brick and mortar. So
I mean, I think the pop-up idea is probably one of the best ideas to get your yows out on your own term.
Yeah.
The only term you don't have is it's not your place. But I mean, that's a beautiful thing about pop-up that I like a lot is you can bring your suitcase and just camp somewhere for a day, and it's not yours. You don't.
Yeah, well, he's done that. The point is, like, so is it worth doing that more permanently to get to a place where you can get your product line, or
I would do it again just to try and see if the flame is still there. Maybe your flame is just low right now, and maybe you just need to revive it.
Yeah.
And maybe you're gonna go, oh, that's actually, you know, I really like this. Mm-hmm. Maybe you forgot some of it, so I would give it at least one try because that's what you've been doing, and that's what really was, you know, your kick. So I would give it at least one more shot, and if that doesn't work, then I would definitely refocus on, you know, creating taste, because I think that's what you really have inside of you.
Yeah.
You know, you're a cook on the inside. You like to eat. You like to taste. So I would stay in that roaming area and try to reflame that up.
But it's. I was trying to tell him how difficult it is to just go out and try and picture like a hatch chili product in the freezer department at your grocery store.
I wouldn't do that.
It's a very daunting process to get there.
Yeah,
I think it's you need more than that.
Oh,
at the base.
Yeah, I understand.
You know, you need the flame to be lit in order to be that crazy.
Because so much of that is about self-promotion, right?
Yeah.
You have to get out there and market market all those things. So.
Great. Well,
thanks,
thank you,
Chris.
Chef. I appreciate that.
Pleasure. Good luck.
I think that's interesting. You know, on this show, we've mentored people many times with products that they have in mind or the restaurant business in general. And it is a interesting time in the restaurant business.
It's a very interesting time.
I'll just say that. Now it's time to explore Bamboo Sushi, a new restaurant coming to our marketplace. Christopher Lofgren is here. He's the chef owner of Bamboo Sushi, and we're going to be right back to chat with him on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. We're back in the Seattle kitchen on Cairo Radio. Always happy to be here at the Hot Stove Society. And we're here every week, 2 hours, for your food lust enjoyment.
And listening pleasure.
We are joined by Christopher Lofgren. He's the chef owner of Bamboo Sushi out of Portland, Oregon, which is now spreading across the country at a swift pace. Welcome to the Seattle Kitchen Show, Christopher.
Thank you.
What's going on? I know that I believe that we are looking at a space close to each other over in Totem Lake, if I'm not mistaken.
We might be. Actually, we can talk about that offline, but yes.
Oh, okay.
Totem Lake's a very interesting development. John Paul, who owns Center Cal, is a great guy and very passionate about designing beautiful outdoor living spaces and malls and things. And so I think he did a great job with Totem Lake, and I'm going to go see it this afternoon, actually.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Say hi to Erica.
I will. That's who I'm having my afternoon tea with.
Yeah. So I'm sorry, I have a question, Chef.
And by the way, I just want to clarify, I do work on the recipe development, but I wouldn't call myself a chef, so I'm not the chef. So.
Okay. I'll call you Chris, then.
I'm just Chris. You can call me Chris.
I was just curious. You guys have a serious reputation in terms of sustainability.
Yes.
And how much you care about where your product comes from. I visited your website. I visited many different places where you mentioned. It is a pretty impressive amount of data you've got there, including your carbon footprint and all that.
Yeah.
It's pretty astonishing. How much work is that for any restaurants to do?
I think if you were starting out and you were trying to copy exactly what we're doing, it would be, you know, I mean, we're celebrating our 11th anniversary this November, so it would be, you know, quite a lot of work to do. I think if you want to start with the basics of just becoming certified for your sustainability, that, you know, is maybe a 6 to 8 month undertaking. And, you know, our whole focus was, when I got into the restaurant business, I came from sort of an outside perspective. So my background was in law and in finance and in technology, and I was really passionate about the environment. And I love food. Like many people who get into the restaurant business kind of on accident, started with a passion for food. I grew up in Los Angeles. Sushi is my favorite food. And when I moved to Oregon, I got asked to invest in a sushi restaurant, and the investment started going poorly, as many novice restaurateurs.
What a shocker!
Right?
I have never heard of an investment going poorly in a restaurant business.
And so, as any good investor does, I was like, well, I invested in something I know nothing about. I should probably learn about this. It was a little late. I should have done it on the upfront. But the more I stepped in and learned about it, the more I started falling in love with the restaurant industry, and the more I started seeing how you know, how many different facets it touches, from, you know, health and wellness to transportation to food and agriculture to climate change. And so the more I got involved with it, the more I realized this was actually a really important business and something that I think a lot of people just overlook as it just serves food, but it does so much more than that. And those of us who are in the industry know that and know how complex it is. But those people outside, I think, have kind of maybe a little bit of a provincial view of what it is. And so the one thing I did want to do, though, that was different was I think, obviously, and as I mentioned earlier, I'm not a formally trained chef, and I have the utmost respect for people who are true chefs. But chefs are not scientists, generally speaking. Chefs are creators. They're
artists. They're not brain surgeon either.
Yeah, they're tastemakers, you know, and they're people who have an incredibly important role to play in terms of changing trends and changing perception, but not necessarily or maybe too much importance placed on their view of what is sustainable and what is not. And so coming from more of a science and data background, I said, well, look, there's these incredible organizations out there in the world that spend millions and millions of dollars a year doing research and then take that research and generally put it in a filing cabinet somewhere. That was back then. Now I guess they drop it into the cloud. But nonetheless, those papers end up not ever seeing the light of day. And so I set out to say, okay, what if you could create a restaurant that was fully sustainable based on the highest level of scientific guidelines, working in tandem with these independent auditing organizations that would come in and basically pull the business apart and tell you how to be more sustainable. And then you would take that information and you would translate that to your chefs and your customers in terms of a fun and exciting way. So not doom and gloom, but really like, here's the most sustainable standards. Here's how we're going to source. Here's how we're going to make this work. And then tell the customer, this is why we're doing it.
Right.
And that's how we got to that level of sustainability. And then from that DNA kind of being baked into the company, we just moved on. And so something that for me, I moved to Oregon to become an environmental lawyer. And so language is really important for me. And on the bottom of every menu, it used to say back in the day, whenever possible, we source local, sustainable, whatever. And I always joke that I didn't say that to my wife at our vows. I didn't say, like, whenever possible, I'll be faithful. And whenever possible, I'll take care of you. She would have laughed and, you know, said, we're not going to, whenever possible, we're not going to be married.
Whenever possible, I'll marry you.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, the idea that you can say that basically negates everything that comes after it. And so for me, I wanted to create a restaurant that said, we will always do this no matter what. And that everything we do is based in the most rigorous science possible, not derived from our own theories, but derived from the world's foremost scientist.
Mm-hmm. That's very awesome. That's a very serious commitment.
Yeah.
And so how much would you guess that limits your variety of possibilities at your restaurant?
Yeah. So with sushi, I mean, obviously, you know, if you're a regular sushi restaurant, you can pretty much source anything you want. And in general, one of the things that is interesting, though, is that most people only eat, as we know as restaurateurs, 8 to 10 different things.
Correct.
Right? And then there's all these different things that are really cool and fun and exciting, but people are focused on salmon, crab, albacore tuna, shrimp, etc. And so what was cool was that a lot of those more important species were able to be sourced sustainably. And so we went and found the people doing it to the highest level, or people who wanted to replenish stocks, or people who wanted to actually change their fishing methods to do something sustainably from unsustainable. And then for the things that were sort of on the fringe, we wanted to find those cool kind of up-and-coming fish, so to speak, or up-and-coming items that chefs were really excited about working with, but that guests may not know of, and so we could change their perspective. And a simple one was, at the beginning, we couldn't serve hamachi. Hamachi's farm-raised. It's generally fed a genetically modified soy and chicken feather diet. That is not a misstatement, a chicken feathers and chicken byproduct parts.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is not what the fish is naturally eating in its environment. And so it does come out with that kind of buttery, slimy taste that a lot of hamachi has. And for us, we wanted to source it wild, but it only swims for about 2 weeks out of the year. It's generally a bycatch product. And so we were like, well, we need something on the menu that's year-round. And so we found Kona Kampachi, and Kampachi is a jackfish in a similar family.
Yeah.
It has a little bit lighter, more mild flavor. It was being grown off the Hawaiian coast. It was one of the first, if it was actually the first major U.S. aquaculture farm that was
open
doing
net.
It the right way, open net pen.
Oh, they're closed net pens, I think.
No, they're open.
No, open.
Yeah.
Well, I fly over them all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, they look like they're closed, but they're not actually
Okay. Open meaning the sides are open.
Yeah, the sides are open. Yeah.
Not non-closed. Yeah, so the current goes through them, essentially,
yes.
as open pen. Well, so you wouldn't want to... So closed generally is on land. So closed tank circulation is generally on land. You're keeping all the byproduct, the excrement, and everything else that comes out of the fish, and then you're filtering it through a normal sewage treatment plant. Out at sea, if you put them too close to estuaries or things like that, obviously British Columbia suffered a lot of issues with this, so did Chile, where they put the fish farms too close to either other habitats or human habitats, and basically they stocked the pens with too many fish, and so then it was basically overwhelming to that area. Similar to like if you had a livestock issue with cattle. No different, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so, all the feces drops, you know, straight away, and create an intense environment rather than, especially in Kona, where the wave action is really strong.
Yeah.
You create a flush environment.
Exactly.
So
they're doing it in this beautiful tidal. It's about maybe 2 miles offshore. You can see the airport actually from there. It's incredible. And so the fish are out there in these pens. I've actually gotten the chance to swim with them last year. And the pens go up and down. They're on a hydraulic lift. And there's the current that goes through them, and then the feed drops into them, and it's a beautiful farm doing it a really, really good way. And so that was, anyway, a way of us being able to answer Tom's first question of how do we get other products kind of that are sustainable but that might be different from what the guest really originally wanted.
All right, so we're going to come back and talk with you next week also.
Oh,
and because I want to talk a little bit about conscious hospitality.
Cool.
And some of the things that go along with being sustainable, not just with the seafood, but also with your team and all of that. So
and your new restaurant in the University District.
Yes, that'd be great. Thanks.
All right. So up next, we have Brittany Bartleben. She's the pastry chef from Dahlia Bakery and Dahlia Lounge. And we're going to talk fruitcake. Let's get started on fruitcake on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Back in the kitchen. This is the Cairo Radio. We're coming to you from the Hot Stove Society here. Walking across the street is our favorite baker, Chef Brittany Bartleben from the Dahlia Bakery and Dahlia Lounge. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Hello, Brittany.
Hello.
This is the Baker's Corner. Now, Britt, we probably have no listeners right now because I announced earlier in the show that this segment was going to be about fruitcake.
Yeah.
And I think you're wrong, Tom. I think you're wrong. I think a lot of people like fruitcake.
Really?
Yeah. I think people just...
I just never met one.
Would love to know how to make a good fruitcake.
Fruitcake has become a joke.
Let's take an informal poll in our audience. How many people like fruitcake, or how many people like? Put a hand up. 2, 3, 4 out of 12.
Less than half.
Five. Five.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then how many people loathe fruitcake? 1, 2, 3. You're a vegetarian now. You got to get over this stuff.
How many people have actually tasted fruitcake?
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Most people,
anyway,
most people
so
haven't.
A couple of people haven't, but fruitcake. I love fruitcake.
Yeah.
My earliest memory of fruitcake was when my neighbor, Mr. Jackson, used to come by. He was with the Lions Club, and he would sell fruitcakes around the neighborhood, and the money went, I want to say, to the blind or something like that, mm-hmm. to services for the blind. Mm-hmm. That's what I remember the Lions Club. That was their efforts. Were the,
well, let me ask you this.
And those
about,
were very much green and red.
Okay, so they did
cherries.
Have the very violently green and red glassy cherries.
They were every
okay.
trashy thing you
yeah.
could think of
okay.
was in that fruitcake.
Okay.
And then since then, I've grown up, and I've actually had real fruitcakes.
Yes.
With beautiful Australian glazed fruits or Parisian glazed fruits or homemade glazed fruits or June Taylor out of San Francisco glazed rinds and fruits. They can be awesome.
They can be incredibly awesome. And not only that, the time that it takes to make them. I mean, if you receive a fruitcake, you need to feel loved because somebody put a lot of time in that.
Yeah.
It's
right.
It's a long process.
I think it's a great way to use your dried out fruit from the summertime.
No. You're dried out. You make it sound horrible.
No,
dehydrated.
Dehydrated.
Use the stale bread in your stuffing. Why not? Just use your dried out.
Words are important to Tom.
Dehydrated.
Okay, that's better.
Sorry, not dry.
Dried out is what you said. Anyway, keep going.
Hello, so sensitive. We're trying to make people actually get in the kitchen and make one.
Yeah.
Just one.
At some point, fruitcakes became a joke, and I do think it has to do with those glacé cherries, which are really gross.
Yeah.
I think it was like Johnny Carson had this joke that there's only one fruitcake in the entire world, and people just keep passing it around to each other. So it's actually really, really good.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, but it's all about the fruits that you're using. If you're using beautiful dried Italian plums and, you know, really nice plump cherries and raisins, and then those are then soaked for at least overnight, if
not,
you know, a few days.
Use good booze.
Good fruits. Yeah. I mean, what's not to like
about
it?
What's the cake part? How important is the cake part? Is that just... I mean, it's usually kind of a darker color. So what are people making the cake
I would say every step is important,
okay.
And the cake is important. It's usually our fruitcake bars that we make at the Dahlia Bakery. Is
so good. I had them last
so
week.
So good,
I
right?
sent you a picture of me.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Very handsome picture of Tom eating a fruitcake bar. It's butter, sugar, eggs, a lot of spices. Mm-hmm. Some recipes use honey, juices, other things like that, syrups to really help preserve it. Our fruitcake bars are a little different, so I shouldn't compare the two, but we don't. And then, yeah, good booze. You can do rum. I've seen recipes with scotch. I've seen bourbon, just whatever you like.
Yeah.
And that's a very important part of the recipe as well.
It also depends on the fruit. I think if you use more like dried pineapple, you want to use rum.
Yes.
If you use dried cherry, you want to use sherry liquor. I mean, it's nice to match with the fruit that you're using if you're going to use, you know, more of one fruit.
Yeah.
So that usually works better.
And that's what's great about
fruitcake.
Brandy's
always a good safety.
Brandy's safe. That's what we use. And you can tinker a fruitcake recipe to your palate. I don't personally like dried pineapple, so I would just swap that out with something else.
Right.
I abhor those glacé cherries. I think those should just go away.
That's so funny because you're so into trashy food.
I know. I knew you would say that to me, too.
But you abhor
I have
those.
A line.
Yeah.
that if you have a dehydrator, like I was trying to say earlier, Tom, is if you've, you know, taken those beautiful Bing cherry we had in the summertime and dehydrate some of those and blueberries and blackberries. And it's a great place to use those fruits.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Agreed.
It's a fabulous place to make a very good fruit dessert.
Okay, so here's my favorite part. Like, I'm a big fan of making an effort on something like that, and then that's my holiday gift,
right?
So, of course, people think you hate them if you give them a fruitcake. But, you know, so what I like to do is after these cakes are birthed, right, you've done the process.
You've labored through them.
You've labored through the process and their birth, and you've got these beautiful loaves, and they're dense, and they've got, we'll say, some of your dried cherries. They've got some beautiful glaceed pears, you know, just some fruits that you really like, not a bunch of bad pineapple or, or mango or, you know, that's not really, I don't think, the British intention behind the fruitcakes. So you've got these, and now I like to wrap them in cheesecloth.
Yes.
Right? And then here in the bottom of my fridge, and I got to be careful because I got meat in your fridge.
Uh-huh.
I happen to have a garage fridge, so this is where I go with those.
Of course you do. Yes,
yes of course I do. It's a Sub-Zero, 48-inch, two-door. but anyway.
Some people have nice cars.
I have two things in the bottom of my fridge in the garage. One is 16 vintages of Cougar Gold cans, and I got my fruitcakes, right? So I take them and I put them into the cheesecloth, and then I soak them in brandy. Mm-hmm. I use Calvados. And then I wrap them in foil, and I let them sit in there, and I mark them, vintage date them.
Yeah.
And this is what I do in January for next Christmas.
Ah, okay. So you have to rotate them.
So every 3 months, I open them up, re-soak them in brandy, and close them back up and turn them so that the brandy keeps and they keep
aging.
And
those cakes, those will last for like 25 years.
But here's the thing about that. It's so different than making a batch cookie and taking it to your neighbor's house, right?
Yeah.
You are watching those for a year. They become special.
Yeah. And that's what I meant by it's a very special gift to give somebody. Yeah. You put a lot of time into those. I would say if you wanted to make fruitcake for this year for Christmas gifts, do it this weekend.
Right now, yeah.
Like, yeah. Mm-hmm. You wait too much longer and it's just...
And here's the thing. They'll be good either way.
Totally.
But they feel more special when you've babied them along for a year.
So what happens is those fruits, like they slowly soak up the booze and the spices, and it's almost like wine, like the tannins and the fruits mellow. This is true. It's like aging it just like a really nice wine.
And I got a great idea. This is a gift that can make two Christmases instead of one. This year, you give them the card that says, I've made something special for you. You'll get it next
coupon
year.
Coupon for one fruit cake.
And then a year later, you give it to them, and they're like, oh my God, you spent a year doing this for me.
Yeah.
How's that?
It's an investment in time. It's a labor of love.
This year is a card.
Now, there's a mix-up, and Terry, actually, we talked about a little bit earlier, about between steam puddings and fruitcakes.
Oh, very different.
Very different, right? So what is that difference?
Steam puddings, you want to eat day
right away.
Warm day of. It's a very dense, sticky, warm, spicy cake, but that's basically where the similarities end. Sometimes they have dried fruit in them. Fruitcake is baked, but it's then you have to, you know, cure it with the alcohol. Mm-hmm. That's a really important
step. And typically when you serve steam pudding, you just reheat it for a bit and serve it with hard sauce, which is butter, powdered sugar, and brandy or some sort.
Whatever. So do you put a glaze on your fruit pudding, on your fruitcake?
No, I don't. I serve it with hard sauce personally.
Yeah.
It's so rich.
Like old school recipes, they then have you like build them and frost them into these grand productions. Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of gross because I don't think it needs much else.
Definitely enough sugar in it and booze and everything, so you don't need to.
Yeah.
Here's the other trick I would say, and maybe you know the name of the right persimmon to get for the steam pudding.
California persimmon.
Is it California persimmon? Now's the time to buy them.
Yes.
And put them in a paper bag and put them on the top of your fridge or someplace.
That
just
puree
on the counter.
Ripe,
they take
and just let
forever.
Them rot on your
absolutely.
Counter. Literally until they're soup. And then you want to make your steam pudding out
Speaking
of
Speaking of tannins, there's nothing more unpleasant than an underripe, or not ready, I should say not ready persimmon. That'll suck all the moisture out of your mouth.
It certainly will.
Yeah.
If you want to know what it tastes like, you should use your quince right now and just take a bite out of it. And
One of my bakers loves raw quince. It just runs chills down my spine when she eats them. But,
well, there are certain kinds of quince that are intended to be that way.
So the soaking of the dried fruit, I mean, most people are not familiar with that because they're not normally using that. Overnight?
Overnight is best.
Yes.
If you are really in a pinch and you need to get it moving, you can heat your alcohol. Don't make it flame, but just heat it till it's just about to simmer and then pour it over
and
your fruit.
And do you add sugar to it or
Mm-mm.
no?
Nope.
Just by itself?
Just by itself.
Cool.
Well, if the fruit is glaceed or dried already, generally it's plenty sweet.
Yes.
And
any sort of raisin?
Yeah.
Just trying to...
Do you have a favorite raisin? There's so many on the marketplace these days. Or do you just go... I often use dried cherries instead of raisins because they have more flavor, but...
I don't have a favorite raisin. We tend to use golden raisins because they're really, really plump, and that's what people tend to like. But I just like raisins. And I would not swap out a cherry for a raisin because they're different, you know, for an oatmeal raisin cookie.
Toasted walnuts or toasted hazelnut
We like pecans in ours, and toasted is key in your fruitcake. Don't ever put an untoasted nut in there. That's just a bad idea.
We should have a little survey. I hate walnuts.
Do you?
Yeah. Really?
I know. My sister hates them, too. She thinks they taste dirty. But yeah. To me, a well-toasted walnut is so tasty.
Speaking of tannic, they're tannic also.
They do have tannins.
And
yes,
here's one thing. The last thing I'll say on fruitcake is I used to always make the trek to the Pike Place Market and go to De Laurentiis for the dried fruit because they always had that best brand. I think it was out of Australia, but it might have been out of France. But it's fun to go down and buy your supplies.
It's a fun little thing to do, and it feels very holiday.
And
to
if
go
you
down
feel
there.
Very lazy, just get a panettone.
Stalin's.
Are you up for a food for thought
I'm
tasty
all for
trivia
it.
Challenge?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
All right, coming up next, food for thought tasty trivia on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. In the Seattle kitchen on Cairo Radio here at the Hot Stove Society. It's time for Food for Thought Tasty Trivia. And I'm feeling it today because of my fruitcake. My fruitcake has got me ready to work out.
Yeah.
Yeah,
nice.
I'm feeling it today. Chef Tina. You're our plant-based chef.
I love it when you call
chef.
Me chef.
Yeah.
Using that term very loosely. Mm-hmm. All right, you guys, here's how this game is played. I'm going to give you each five questions. Whoever gets the most correct is the winner, and whoever gets the least correct needs to give something away to a wonderful person from our audience. So today you'll be playing for Michael, who was brave enough to come up to the microphone earlier and ask a question.
Yeah.
So, should you lose this quiz today, Miss Brittany Bartleben, what would you like to give to Michael?
I'm going
to
give Michael a $75 gift card to the Dahlia Bakery and a copy of the Dahlia Bakery cookbook where the fruitcake bar recipe lives.
Nice.
So good.
And I can't remember, did you say you liked fruitcake or didn't like I think we're going to convert you.
Michael's going to make them just because you've been so generous.
Yep.
And he's going to email us and tell us
all about it.
How he liked it.
Pressure's on, Michael.
Yeah.
How about brunch at Luke in Madison Valley? Brunch for two, Saturday or Sunday.
Chef Tom Douglas, what would you like to give away to Michael should you lose today?
Well, you know, Thanksgiving is coming up.
Sure is.
And you said the fruitcake bars will be in the bakery?
Uh-huh.
Okay. So then let's have dinner for two at the Palace Kitchen.
Let's get away from the bakery.
I love that.
Well, he says he hates fruitcake. So.
Don't even want to be in the same
$100 gift
it.
Card to the Palace Kitchen.
All right. Super fun. All right. Who would like to go first?
I'll stop.
All right. Here we go. Your first question. Which of the following techniques is used to laminate dough? Rolling and folding layers of dough and fat? Brushing dough with olive oil before baking, mixing butter with flour before adding the water, or is it adding a glaze to a baked good before it has cooled down?
I'll go with number one.
Rolling and folding layers, that is correct.
Really?
All right, question number two.
I'm glad you didn't give that.
I know.
I'm glad you didn't give that to Brittany.
I thought you were going first, girl.
Tom, the truth just came out.
All right, Chef. Question number two. Which of the following cuts of beef is the leanest? Skirt steak, filet mignon, eye of the round steak, or ribeye?
Filet mignon.
The answer is eye of the round.
Is it leaner than the filet mignon?
Mm-hmm. Apparently, because that was the question.
Last time I put my eye on it, it was.
I made a roundabout and went back to the filet mignon.
My mother always made eye of the round.
Yeah.
All right, Chef, question number three for you. True or false, imitation crab is not crab at all?
That is correct.
Right. What is it? Pollock, right?
It's pollack, I believe.
Oftentimes there's 10% crab in it, though. So.
For this trivia question, it's none at all. Okay. Question number four for you, Chef. Which of the following squash is not commonly made into canned pumpkin pie? Butternut, Golden Delicious, acorn, or Boston Marrow?
Ooh, what is that last one? I've never heard of the Boston Marrow before, but I'm going to go with the... Since I don't know what that is, I'm going to go with the acorn.
You are correct. Acorn's right. Nicely done.
Ooh,
all right.
That was one out of four.
three correct answers.
I just knew the answer. That's all.
You've gotten more correct now than you have gotten incorrect. Very good.
That is right.
Your last question. When making bagels and pretzels, what is the main purpose of boiling the dough before baking it? Is it to help set a limit on how much the leavener can rise? Is it for setting a thicker and chewier crust? Building up more proteins to help it keep its shape, or all of the above?
What was the first one you said?
Oh, my God.
To help set a limit on how much the leavener can rise?
Yeah, I think that's the one.
It's actually for setting a thicker and chewier crust.
Oh, well, yes, sorry, of course there was that. All right, 3 out of 5.
All right,
challenge
three
is up
for you. All right, Chef Brittany Bartleben, you are up next. You nervous?
No.
I am. Okay, question number one for you. Which U.S. barbecue region is famous for its mustard-based barbecue sauce? Alabama, South Carolina, Memphis, or North Carolina?
Let's go South Carolina.
Ooh, good job.
Yeah.
That is the answer. Nicely done. All right, question number two for you. A Lillet sets itself apart from other wines because it is what?
Fortified. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You have some options.
Okay. Lay them on me.
Is it fermented in a cask? The grapes go through a caramelizing before fermentation. It is a blend of wine and liquor, or the grape skins are removed before going into fermentation.
Let's go blend of wine and liquor.
Correct.
Yay!
Correct. 2 for 2. Good job. A lambic beer is different from a traditional beer because of what? The mash is frozen for 2 weeks before continuing the fermentation process. B, is it fermented using rye as its primary grain in the brewing process? C, its wort has mint added to it for a cooling flavor profile. Or D, the yeast and bacteria used is found from a specific region in Belgium.
Let's go with the last one. I don't know.
Yep.
I just know it's fruity.
Yep.
Okay.
That's correct. Right. Nicely done.
This is unbelievable. Yes. Let's just throw a dart.
Told you I wasn't nervous.
Question number four. If you have made a fool, what have you made? A smoked mackerel with pineapple and sugarcane stuffing? A traditional potato dessert bread? A dish of fruit syrup and whipped cream, or a pickled flounder that is coated with peppercorns?
I have made a fruit syrup and whipped cream dish.
Correct. Wow.
Yow.
For a perfect score, your last question, Miss Brittany Bartleben. What strong cheese made from ewe's milk, and stored in caves? Your milk?
Whose milk?
I knew. Someone was going to do it. I knew someone was going to do it.
Whose milk?
Is named after a village in France.
From Bordeaux. I've not been to France. I don't know.
The answer is Roquefort.
Roquefort, thank you.
Yeah. Oh, that was 4 correct. Nicely done.
Yeah, bravo.
The winner thus far, Chef Tom Douglas. 4 is the number to beat. You ready?
Sure.
Fluted pans are famous for what? You have some options. Would you like them?
Oh, yeah. So
okay,
they play a nice tune.
Okay, fluted pans are famous for what? They're always nonstick while effectively conducting heat. They have more crusty surface area for icing when baking cakes in them. They are the traditional name for pie pans, or they are a variant of a baking sheet, but with a grate built-in.
I'm going to say they give more crusty surface.
They actually are always nonstick while effectively conducting heat.
They are
that
not
is
always nonstick.
I've got some tarts.
That is not
I got
true. Yeah. That is 100%.
They didn't even, have nonstick
true.
When
exactly.
they were made.
Would you like to contest this
yes.
question?
No, I'll take the loss. I got broad shoulders here.
All right, question number two.
You get more points saying, no, I'll take it.
I'll take it.
Your second question, Chef. Which of the following cuts of the goat is the most tender? Ribs, leg, shoulder, or loin chop?
Loin chop.
Correct. Your third question, Chef. What is the process that rids food, especially milk, of bacteria?
Pasteurization.
Mm-hmm. Which member of the ginger family is used to color curries?
The one that was on Gilligan's Island.
No. Not that one.
That's pretty
turmeric.
Good.
Correct.
Your
last question. What is the German word for store and is also the name we give to a light beer?
A light beer as in low calorie or a light as in a lager?
Not telling you.
Pilsner.
No.
What?
Lager.
Huh. Oh, 3-3. We're tied, Mr. Douglas.
All right, let's do our slap off.
Okay. All right. For the tiebreaker question, Chefs Tom and Terry, true or false, potatoes are 80% water?
Tom. I'm waiting for you to give the answer.
I will say false.
Yes. I will say false. Absolutely false.
I win.
Since we know what we're talking about, I think he won.
The answer is true.
Ah.
Potato
is you lost.
80%.
So Michael gets not only a $100 gift card to the Palace Kitchen, but brunch for two at Luke Restaurant.
There we go.
Nice job, Michael.
He's a big
winner. Both lost. Good job. Hey, if you want to be part of the show, you can join us, join the community on Facebook or Twitter at Seattle Kitchen. This show is produced by our friends at Large Media. That's L-A-R-J Media. Includes Sean and Abigail and Tina and Joelle. And if you'd like to be part of our studio audience, go to hotstovesociety.com and buy tickets for only $20. It comes with breakfast and hot coffee. And remember, if you miss any episode of Seattle Kitchen on Cairo Radio 97.3, you can listen via podcast from your favorite podcast source.
Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.